Back in March 1977, the largest LSD bust in history cracked a drugs ring based near Tregaron in Wales. 6 million tabs of LSD were recovered by the police and 120 people were arrested throughout the UK and France. We talked about this about a year ago, actually. It was codenamed Operation Julie, which is still regarded as a point of reference for all British undercover operations and training. And we're going to talk about somebody who was there, been there, bought the T-shirt and all the rest of it, because he was actually one of the undercover policemen at the time, and that is Stephen Bentley, who joins us now. Hi, Stephen.
Hi, good evening.
Yes, it's good evening for you, because you're in the Philippines, so yes, well, lovely.
I am indeed, yes.
Good to talk to you, sir. I talked about this entire Operation Julie thing a year ago, and a book came out about it, and you brought out this other book, as a man who was there, and you really did have the T-shirt, right?
I certainly did. I wore many T-shirts.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's kind of refresh people's mind as to what this was all about at the time. This had its origins, the drug ring, in the counterculture of the 60s, and it involved doctors, scientists, university graduates, and then they moved from production from Cambridge to this bizarre location in basically the middle of nowhere in West Wales.
Well, that's true. And when we first kicked off on Operation Julie, we actually didn't know there were two LSD laboratories. One was in a remote location in Wales, as you say, and the other one was in Leafy Hampton Wick in South East London.
Incredible. And how did this come to the police's attention? And I believe it was a kind of a chance finding to do with a Range Rover, is that right?
Well, partly, yes, but you have to go back a little further than that, because there was a guy called Jerry Thomas, a Canadian, who was busted over in Canada, Montreal, I believe, if my memory serves me correctly. And basically, he gave the Metropolitan Police Central Drugs and Intelligence Unit, which doesn't exist anymore,
right,
some information about what he called the British Microdot Gang. And that was the information that was buried away for some time in Scotland Yard. And Dick Lee, who was the operational commander of Operation Julie, in charge of, prior to that, he was in charge of Thames Valley Drug Squad. He started digging and making some inquiries, persuaded the powers that be it needed a multi-force operation, hence Operation Julie. And then he found this crash Range Rover, which belonged to Richard Kemp, one of the LSD chemists, and in the back was this torn piece of paper with which when put together, it was an ingredient that was essential in the manufacture of LSD. So things started rolling from there, really.
And so you were handpicked, basically, by Lee for this dangerous undercover mission. And I can't imagine you kind of had a book that you could read on how to do an undercover mission.
You're absolutely spot on. There was no training, no book, nothing.
Wow.
I actually read a book, Don Yaki, the Indian Way, or whatever it's called, Carlos Castaneda, the author's called. And I read that book to find out what the hell mind-bending drugs were all about. That's mainly to do with peyote and mescaline.
Yeah.
It kind of gave me a little bit of a clue as to what was involved.
Goodness me. And I get the impression it's kind of hours of boredom punctuated by moments of terror, a bit like flying an aeroplane, really. You're sitting around doing nothing for a lot of the time, and then you've got to do something quite drastic.
Yeah. I mean, you know, really my time on Operation Julie was split into two. Most of it was actually undercover, you know, a different identity completely.
Yep.
But part of the time was on surveillance, as the vast majority of the squad were. And it's the surveillance part of it which is the absolutely boring bit.
Sure.
I can't honestly say that being undercover and asked to infiltrate a rural community was actually boring. In fact, most of the time it was enjoyable.
Right.
When you refer to the scary bit, I mean, that was the trip up into Liverpool.
Uh-huh.
This Canadian guy who involved Eric and I, my undercover partner, trying to involve us in a big cocaine importation thing, massive cocaine importation thing. That's when he threatened me, holding his fingers to my head,
as if it was a
pop. I mean, yeah, I mean, that was scary. But, you know, I've got to be honest, the rest of it, my time in Wales with Eric and mixing with the locals, dealers and non-dealers, was actually mostly enjoyable.
Amazing. And how does one infiltrate a gang then? You obviously have to start behaving like them. You have to kind of look like them, dress like them. I think you actually ended up sleeping in the back of a transit van with like hippie flowers down the side. It sounded like something out of Scooby-Doo.
Yeah, that's right. I've got to be... That was Eric's partner's idea, the flowers on the side of the van. For sure. You know, it worked.
We're losing the line a bit here, actually, at the moment, Stephen. I think what I'll do. I'm going to call you straight back because we've lost a bit of the connection there. So I'll talk among myself for a second here, and I'll just call him straight back. We are actually talking to the other side of the world, actually, at the moment. So I think we can be forgiven for the telecoms not being exactly as good as it could be. So let's see if we can get him back. We're talking to Stephen Bentley, who went undercover in the drugs bus Operation Julian. Hopefully you're back with us now. Good morning again, Stephen, or good evening to you.
Yes, hi, I'm back.
Hey, the vagaries of the tele. You are in the Philippines, so I think we can probably be forgiven not trusting the technology. So when we left you there, we were saying that you basically begun this infiltration of the drug ring, and you were living out the back of a van. You basically were behaving like a hippie. But the thing that the overriding thing for me was that you then had to act like them, which of course involves smoking dope, taking cocaine, and what looked like heroic amounts of alcohol.
Yeah, heroic, yeah, good word. Yeah, there were vast quantities of alcohol and there was plenty of dope smoked. And, you know, there was the occasional toke of cocaine.
Must have been hard for you, that. I mean, that you know, I guess once you started, fine, but the initial changing your personality to become that must have been quite tricky.
It wasn't easy. It wasn't easy. I mean, what are you supposed to do? You know, you're mixing with these people and the dope comes out, the weed and the hash, and there's, you know, the bowl comes out, the chillum, the bong, and people are smoking. So what do? Do you turn it down? You go, oh, no, I can't smoke that. I'm an undercover cop. Yeah. You know, so, yeah, it was difficult because I wasn't a smoker and I wasn't a user of Class A drugs. So it was all... That in itself was quite scary because I'm thinking, well, what the hell's going to happen, you know? And, you know, it's horrible feeling in any sphere. It's horrible feeling... You know, feeling that you're losing control, and certainly with the strong cannabis that we were smoking and the cocaine, but particularly the cannabis, you know, I was freaking out and hallucinating on cannabis on one particular occasion.
Goodness.
So yeah, I mean, it was scary because, you know, one slip of the tongue and that could have been. Would have been it.
Well, absolutely, and that's the thing, I guess. That's the kind of present danger, and you had to fit in, and that was the end of it. And in fact, you even enhanced your deep cover by, at one point, you directed drunken abuse at a village constable and then became known as the cop killer.
Yeah, that went down well with the locals. Yeah, my nickname became the cop killer. Poor old PC Lake, he hadn't got a clue what was going on, but I mean, he was bloody rude, so he deserved all the abuse he got from me.
Fantastic. Now, how long, beginning to end, did you have to put all this on for, Stephen? What was the kind of duration that you were with them?
Well, I was on Operation Julie around about 2 years. I was actually undercover in this with Eric, my buddy.
Yeah.
We were actually undercover from the June of 1976 to the March of 1977. So 9 months, best part of a year.
Yeah.
You know, day in, day out. It was a long time.
And, of course, I guess you kind of become friends and quite close to the people that you're around all the time. And, in fact, that was actually brought out when they were arrested, and you didn't get involved in the arrest of one of the guys in particular called Smiles, but you went to see him at the police cells, and he basically said to you, no hard feelings.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I genuinely teared up. You know, I really got to like the guy. Likes him immensely. And, you know, it wasn't easy. It's one of these stresses and strains of working undercover that unless you've been there and done it, got the T-shirt, as you said earlier, then you know, it must be difficult for people. You know, I never felt about him as if he was a bad guy.
Yeah.
You know, he was a professional drug dealer, and he knew the risks involved. And he was making good money and in the distribution network. So when it came to bus time, and I went to see him, that's what led to his no hard feelings, man. You know, I mean, I really, really did like the guy.
Amazing.
And I can't stress that enough. And many people have said reading my book that that's one of the things that is outstanding, you know, that kind of relationship that I had with Smiles.
Amazing, quite amazing. And who made the call to do the actual bust finally then?
Dick Lee made the call. What happened was, by this time this is now February 1977, I'm now on surveillance in Hampton Wick watching the Seymour Road Laboratory. And we saw them, we followed them to a tip at Reading, and they dumped a load of trash there, and what the trash was the remains of a production run. So we seized the trash and got it to the Home Office lab at Aldermaston, where the head honcho, head scientist, Neville Dunner, he analysed it very swiftly and said, yeah, it's full of LSD. That's your laboratory.
Wow.
So everything was put in hand to bust Seymour Road and hundreds of other places throughout the UK, France, wherever, all kinds of places, some arrests in Australia too, various countries.
And as I mentioned there, it was the largest LSD bust in history, and 6 million tabs of LSD were recovered by the police, and 120 people were arrested in total. And one would have then thought that that would have been the end of it, but that's not the whole story, is it? Because you'd lived this kind of life, and it kind of carried on when you'd finished, in a way.
Yeah, it did. It's had a real effect on me psychologically.
Yeah.
And you know, I've got to be frank with you, you know, the drug taking continued on and off for a number of years, and but psychologically it was a disaster for me. You know, I left the police force early and was very, very depressed. It was more than depression. Looking back, I now know it was more than depression. So it ended my career in the police force. So, yeah, I mean, it changed my life completely without a shadow of a doubt.
Goodness me. And I guess you were regarded, though, in police terms, as a kind of hero. And were you decorated in any way for your work?
No. That's one of the sore points. I never even got a chief constable's commendation. I mean, the trial judge, Mr. Justice Parr, he said in the strongest terms that we should all be commended highly. Well, I'm still waiting, you know, there was absolutely nothing. And a number of people resigned before I did, including Eric, including Dick Lee, including Martin Pritchard, one of the other undercover officers. A number of people resigned in disgust. And one of the reasons for the disgust is that we all felt that really Operation Julie was de facto a national drug squad, and we felt it should have been kept going.
Yeah,
really to combat the heroin problem, which was just about starting.
Right.
About you know, we got warned about it, but you know, the powers that be, you know, the police powers that be, you know, they detest and they're very suspicious of elitism in the police force, so it never happened. So a lot of it resigned in total disgust, really.
Yes, and so now your life, I hope, is a little less stressful. You've left the force, obviously. Are you kind of just chilling now?
Well, yeah. I mean, I write to supplement my income. I mean, I've written the book about Operation Julie, but I've also written a number of fiction books as well.
Yeah,
and they're all doing quite well. So I mainly write in my retirement, in my old age in the Philippines.
Yes.
Well, good for you. And let's hope this book sells well for you. It's called Undercover, Operation Julie, The Inside Story. Stephen, it's been a pleasure to talk to you today. It really has. Thank you for joining us from the Philippines and telling us your story.
And you, Bill. I've enjoyed it. Thank you very much for having me.
No problem. Take care.